Hey, this is John Gillespie with Waters and Woods TV. Welcome to another hour of Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick here on The Score.
From the Fast Sign Studios, more than fast, more than signs. It's Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick, presented by Fleet Farm. Be part of the show by calling 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Now, here's your host, Mark Druick.
Greetings and welcome to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. Hoping you are enjoying this rather ugly spring day, but it is spring nonetheless. And if you want to chime in during tonight's broadcast, 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. We'd love to hear from you. And if you would like to reach out to me via email, it's livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. And also, you can find me on Instagram. It's outdoorslivingthe. So, here we are, approaching the end of March and creeping into April, which is the celebration of the annual turkey season. And we've been talking a lot about that. And if you've been checking out a lot of the posts that have been up on the company that I work for, I've been posting a lot of videos up there of my explanation of calls and all different types of tactics and things of that nature. So check those out. It's the real shot. So we are going to talk about turkey again tonight. And a good friend, Scott Ruin, is joining me. Scott, how are you?
Doing well, man. Doing well. It's a busy time of the year between kids and work and life, and have the opportunity and pleasure of being president of the Greenville Lions this year. So definitely keeping me on my toes. We got ZZ Top coming in a few months. So
oh boy.
Little planning on that. The other two bands are getting announced on Monday, I believe. We can announce that. So it's definitely been a busy spring. And obviously we're at the moment, like you just said, trying to get into turkey season. The leftover tags went on sale on Monday, and I was able to remember last minute this morning to get in and get a couple for my daughter and I. So
there you go. President of the Greenville Lions Club. That's a pretty big deal.
Keeps me on my toes. Yeah, it's been a busy year. We stay active in the community and do a lot. And it's a great organization to be part of. And the amount of volunteers that we have together and members of the club, I think we're going to install our 90th member. So wow. Volunteer organization, it's a lot of fun.
That's
a lot
impressive. Well, success. A lot of successes are based on volunteers, so that's awesome. Now, are you guys able to do your banquet last year? Or
we did.
You did? Because I know you postponed it, I believe, right?
Yep, we had to cancel it because of COVID 2 years ago, but we were able to have it again last year down at the Grand Meridian. Happens in October, second Wednesday, and it's always a good time. Always a good time. We got a lot of organizations that help us out with that, so yeah, one of those other things that fundraisers we do to give back to the community. You know,
that's complete, awesome.
Complete nonprofit. Everything goes back to the community. So,
awesome, awesome. So, other than that, life is busy. Kids, you know, work, all that kind of fun stuff. So it's kind of, this must be a nice little break for you to come and sit here
it
and
is.
Talk turkeys.
It is. I just like I just said, it's nice to sit down.
I know the feeling. It's it slowed down a little bit for me, which is a good thing. I like that a lot. I've got good people working for me, so they allow me to not be there all the time and be everybody's everything all the time. So I'm really fortunate in that respect to have a great crew of guys that really really support me and back me up. So you know, and I'll be retiring in about a year, well, 12 months, 14 months, I think. So
good for you.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. And
me too, and I'm only 42. I can't wait to retire.
Well, you know, when you get to that point and you decide, you know, you don't really think about it, and then all of a sudden it's like you get to that point in your life, it's like, all right, well, you know, the planning process of you're a little more definitive and how you process things and budgeting and finances and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know that I'll stop working, but I'll stop working, you know, in the retail sector, I think. But
I look forward to hunting more.
Yeah.
Getting back into fishing.
I know. That's what everybody says. Well, you know, a guy asked me tonight, he goes, I hear you're retiring. I'm like, yeah. And he said, well, you know, are you going to do your show 5 days a week? I'm like, no. I'm going to do it one day a week, and we have the means to do it remotely if there's a Wi-Fi or something like that. So I said, I don't necessarily have to be in the studio. I'd love to be in the studio, but, you know, the part of, you know, if I'm able to do it where I'm at, I'm going to be doing that. So,
it is nice to be back in the studio. In the last 2 years, I've been, fortunate enough to be on the show with you here. It's just a little different being in the office in the basement than it is sitting here talking with you. So
it is. And it's, you know, we had our warden, Mary Bish, and it's the first time she's actually been in the studio, and we've been doing it, since the start of the COVID situation. And she goes, wow, it's really different. It's a lot more fun. It is because, you know, really now we're looking at each other and we can play off the cues, and a producer can say, hey, you know, it's time for a break, do this, do that. It's a lot more fun to be in here. Not that it isn't nice sitting in my office at home, but like you said, much better in the studio. So yeah, we are very, very grateful here at Living the Outdoors to be back in the studio. But so turkey hunting, I know that this is something that you're a diehard, and you really haven't been, you've been doing it for a while, but not all that long. How many years has it been now?
Since 2008 was my first year. So this coming up will be 14th year. So
yeah.
And, 9 out of the last 13, I've spent a lot of time, mentoring and getting a lot of, new people involved in hunting. And yep. That's probably the hardest part. I wasn't able to get together the Learn to Hunt program this year for Outagamie County. And it, unfortunately, a lot of counties didn't. Normally when I'm on the show, you know, there's 18 to 20 throughout the state. And I looked last night, there's only 5. So yep. COVID definitely affected that. I really hope to get in touch with the mentors and landowners and hopefully kind of rekindle that next year when I have a little more time. But I was really bummed not to be able to do this because through the years I've been keeping track. And I'm at 99 people that I've helped introduce to turkey hunting through the years, whether it's in the classroom, taking kids out in youth hunt, actually mentoring them in the field, or you know, just during the regular seasons, taking out people that never hunt. So I was really hoping to hit that 100 milestone. That, you know, season's upon us, so I still have the opportunity to do so.
Always take someone.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's not an official mentoring program, but that's what I did for years. Right. You know, before they really initiated the mentoring program, I was always finding somebody to take.
Right.
And whether I took them, you know, hunting on public property or utilized my own property, I always found it necessary to get somebody somewhere along the line exposed to turkey hunting.
Right. And it started in 2010, the whole mentoring aspect of hunting in Wisconsin, where a person had to do was get a DNR customer number, and then the system automatically knew that they did not go through hunter safety, they did not, you know, have any experience hunting, but all the guidelines and rules that were in place for mentoring allowed them to get a tag that said mentor hunting, and, you know, a licensed hunter could bring somebody out and give them the opportunity and introduce them to it. So
yeah,
it's been a lot of fun through the years to be able to do that, and hopefully I can get to do it again yet this year. So
yeah, you will. You'll find somebody to get out there. But you know, it's a great program, even though it's not, you know, not many counties are participating in it. But it's a great program to, you know, not unlike the other DNR programs where you get people such as yourself, and I've helped you out with that for a few years, and guys who love to do what they do, whether it's turkey hunting or duck hunting or whatever. Gives them the opportunity to connect to somebody who hasn't. And, you know, you go through the classroom part of it with the warden and the biologist and, you know, the whole scenario of from start to finish. It's a pretty cool program. And I think, you know, from my perspective, turkey hunting is a great way to expose somebody to the sport because it's very interactive.
Oh, it for sure. There's no age limit to it. Like we've had in Outagamie County through the years, it was, you know, when retired Warden Mike Young, who's on, you said was on a show last week, and yep. Ryan Props, and when they got this together, it was the only adults only learn to hunt in the state. And we had first time hunters from 18 all the way up to 67 that had never hunted turkeys. We got them in, and we had a great group of mentors, and hopefully we can get them back together next year. And they're all turkey nuts, just like you and I. I mean, and you get that much knowledge and experience and all in the same room. I mean, it's an action-packed, just full of info, full of experience type of situation that these first-time hunters can just sit back and be like, wow, you know, can't wait to experience this. And there's only one time through the years that I remember a hunter didn't hear a gobble or see a bird in the morning hunt, but they ended up getting one that afternoon. So sure. It's a great program to get people involved. There's one in Pulaski, NWTF group up there has one, and Randy Dumais, who I think you've met before, mm-hmm. He was a judge.
Yep.
At the turkey call competition, he's got one going down in like Sheboygan area. So those are the closest ones. I think Shadows of the Wolf has one as well out by Shiocton. So there's still a few in the area, but yeah, it's unfortunate COVID kind of put a damper on it a little bit, but hopefully next year everybody gets back in the swing of things.
Yeah. And, you know, reflecting on what you said, Scott, you know, when you're a first time turkey hunter and that night, you're going through the instructional aspect of it, and you're surrounded with guys that you would never, you know, have an opportunity to get that much knowledge. You know, every time I go, I always learn something from those guys. You right. know, there's somebody that's got something different, that they've tried something different. And, you know, from a beginner standpoint, you walk into a room like that, it's like you've got all these people together with all this knowledge and experience. It's like, that's the perfect place for you to be. Plus, you learn the rules from the warden, and you also learn, you know, a little bit about the history of wild turkeys in Wisconsin. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that don't know that. Yeah, there was a huge wild population, but then it was eliminated.
Yeah, the last known bird up until the reintroduction in the 70s, the last known wild bird in Wisconsin was shot in 1881 over in Burlington. So, there could have been one taken out after that, but that's the last known one. So yeah. Up until reintroduction and started in 76. So.
It's a long time frame to be without turkeys. And now I would, with the way that they've spread out, I wouldn't think there isn't a county in the state of Wisconsin that doesn't have a turkey in it.
No, all 72 counties have a steady, stable turkey population. When they were first reintroduced in the 70s, there was mostly down in the southwest part of the state, right. Down around Boscobel. And they didn't think at the time that turkeys would survive in the northern two-thirds of the state because of the harsh winters. And they're a tough bird. Yeah. They're a tough bird. And you can actually find them up in Canada. You can go and get the World Slam, and I think a few provinces up in Canada have birds too. So
yeah, it's, you know, Wisconsin is, you know, the birds have just, they used to be highly concentrated. You know, and I hunted down in the area where the DNR trapped a lot of them to transplant them to different parts of the state. And there was a lot of birds. But now I don't think the population has diminished at all. They're just spread out.
Yeah, and they did a lot of efforts in those early years to transplant them. There's almost 4,000 birds that were relocated to just shy of 200 sites throughout the state during all that time to bolster the populations throughout the state. So it was a phenomenal recovery effort by the DNR to get this back up. I mean, it's one of the greatest conservation efforts in the U.S., in my opinion. I mean, what Wisconsin did for the turkey population is unbelievable.
Yeah, that is the to me, too, it's the biggest success story. You know, trading some rough grouse to, I believe, Missouri
yep.
for turkeys and transplanting them here. And I've been hunting every year except for the first 2 years. Of turkey hunting. My buddies got me involved with it, and they
went 1985 out. Then first long hunting season time. Was 83.
Yeah, long time.
I was four, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only turkey you knew was the one that was served on Thanksgiving, right?
Yep.
You know, so you know, the cool part about that is, you know, there were a lot of years before I shot one, you know, and that really didn't, it wasn't really all about that. It was about learning. Of course, you know, you're you know, 20s and you're young and you want to go out and you want to shoot something, but you know, number one, being exposed to that area of the state in Prairie du Chien is absolutely gorgeous.
Right.
The morel mushrooms and finding sheds and being in a part of the state that's extremely hilly, but you know, learning how to hunt that, and I learned a lot working that type of terrain. And then once I bought my property in Waupaca, then I ended up, you know, doing a lot of hunting there and hitting some public lands and stuff like that. But you know, it's such a fun sport because it, you know, I talk about it all the time. It's the world comes back to life. You know, now you can see the swans are back, the turkey vultures are back, the red poles are back. A lot of migration is going on right now. And that's always my indicator. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, turkey season's not too far off. And you get that. For me, it's a great break between, you know, waterfowl hunting and waterfowl hunting. I trout fish a little bit, not as much as I used to. But, you know, I don't do a lot of, you know, I don't own a boat anymore. I'm just kind of a recreational fishing kind of guy. So that time spent in the turkey woods in spring is real special to me.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not as crazy for me as it used to be. I just don't have it in me anymore to get up that early. But I mean, in the early part of my turkey hunting days, I mean, I was getting up for work at 3:30 in the morning, and then between that and scouting and calling for other people and hunting, one year I had 63 days in a row I was up by 3:30 in the morning. So
oh boy,
that wears you out fast. But yeah, it's an addiction, and it's like you said, the world comes back to life, and that there's nothing that beats those spring mornings out in the woods chasing turkeys, listening for that gobble. And I mean, that, to me, that's one of the greatest sounds in the world, is that first gobble of the year, and I haven't heard it yet. So
yeah, I'm waiting. We've had a group of them that have hung around my house in south of Neenah, in the town of Inland, and I haven't seen them as of yet. But they usually end up in our area. I've had them walking out on my deck and made the cat absolutely crazy. The cat wasn't quite sure what kind of a mourning dove that was, but she was. They walked right up to the window. But anyway, you know. One of the most fun things that I've had mentoring people is, you know, not only the hunting aspect of it, but all the different, you know, animals that you're going to see. Wow. You know, everything's out of its den, the cranes, the geese, the wood ducks, the mallards, the teal, all of your songbirds. It's kind of a nature lesson because everything's making noise.
Yep.
You know, and I can envision this every single time without really even having to think hard about it, is you're sitting there and they're sitting there and you're sitting there. All of a sudden that first robin starts chirping and it's still dark out, and they're just, and then all of a sudden that just starts the whole chorus of birds. And then the whippoorwills start. And then all of a sudden, boom, that first one goes off and you're like, okay, well, good. We're in a good spot, you know? It is a real special time, and I've spent a lot of really, made some great memories turkey hunting with a lot of different people. And I will continue to do it as long as humanly possible. If I have to get one of those motorized wheelchairs, I'm going. It just is it's a great sport. The birds are awesome. Their behavior is kind of bizarre sometimes, to say the least, because they're pretty weird.
Yeah.
You know, they do some pretty weird stuff. And, again, you can't notice that when you're sitting at home in the couch. But, you know, hey, if you got a question or a comment, 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email me at livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. But, you know, here, you know, now we talked about it a little bit. You brushed on that the leftover tags are up for grabs.
Yeah.
And today was zone 3, I think, and they didn't last, but what did you tell me? Like 20 minutes?
The third period, there's, I think, 3,200 tags or something like that for the third period, and they sold out in 14 minutes today. So, yeah, they're flying pretty good, because it's good to see that. Last year, there was 16,000 less tags sold during all the leftover tags. So I think more people were applying for them. I think it had a lot to do with COVID and people trying to get out. There's still quite a few tags, but some of these zones, zone 6 completely sold out in the application process. Zone 7 only has 105 tags left for the last week, and there's about 3,100 left over for zone 5. So there's a lot of applicants, a lot of tags that were sold in the application process, but there's still a lot of leftover tags. Even after zone 1 had their leftover tag sale on Monday, there's still almost 29,000 tags left. So zone 1, 3, and 4 almost always have tags left over at the end of the season. And when I looked before, just before we walked in the studio, there's a little less than 4,500 left for the fourth period for zone 3, which is a bulk of the listening area here. And zone 2 only has some for week 6 left. They have a 5,800 left for week 6 after their sale yesterday. So it's good to see all the tags getting out. There's quite a few, like I said, quite a few left to be sold. So we'll see how it goes and see what's left over. All the rest of the tags will go on sale. Well, I shouldn't say that. Thursday, tomorrow, zone 4 and then 5, 6, and 7 go on sale Friday, and then everything's available one tag per day starting at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning. So you can get one tag a day as long as they're available. I figured it out the other day. It's actually physically possible for a guy to get one in the application, pick up a tag every day of this one day sale, and then you can pick up one tag a day as long as they're available. You could technically get 73 tags in the state of Wisconsin if you really wanted. So
that's a whole topic for conversation. I want to talk about that when we come back, but I think we're going to hold off on that, and we're going to go ahead and take our first break. So keep it tuned in here to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show, right on the Score.
This is Nicole Reeve with Driven TV, and you're listening to Living the Outdoors with Mark Jurek here on 95.3 WSCO.
All right, welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show. Right here on the Score, I'm your host, Mark Jurek. Thanks for tuning us in. Glad to have you along for the ride. My guest is Scott Roon, and we're talking about turkey hunting. You know, Scott, we kind of left off with, Wisconsin being, one of those states that has,
too many tags.
Too many tags and too many zones. And, you mentioned you could have the possibility to get, 70-some tags if you bought one every day?
If I figured it out right, 73 tags for the entire season.
And I have some opinions about that, and if somebody wants to, chime in and they want to agree with me or disagree, it's 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Scott, if I even had a tag for every period, for every zone, I don't know that I would shoot that many turkeys. In all the years that I've been hunting, I've shot 22 birds. Only once did I shoot two in one season, and that was more of a fluke than anything else. It was almost like by accident. But how many turkeys do you really need to shoot? It's kind of like the deer thing, and everybody's got their opinions about you get all these doe tags, shoot all these does and stuff like that. Just because you can get the tags doesn't necessarily mean you have to go out and smack that many turkeys.
Right. I mean, I enjoy turkey hunting as much as the next turkey nut out there. But, in all reality, it's, like you said, a very generous state. I mean, Wisconsin is one of the top turkey hunting states in the country, and it's because of the license structure that they have of separating everything into six seasons and only allowing so many tags per season and limiting the amount of hunters and the amount of pressure and the amount of birds harvested before, peak breeding really happens. And, in Wisconsin here, the northern part of the country, that peak breeding doesn't happen until the end of April into early May. So, there's a bill out there right now because, of course, the politicians got to get their paws in on everything. It was introduced at the end of October, AB 671, and it's a bill to pretty much restructure the entire turkey season here in Wisconsin and separate it from six separate weeks into two separate seasons. So there'd be a two-week season in this proposal that would give hunters opportunity to hunt if you got a tag in the application process and you apply for your tags in December. By December 10th is always the deadline, and then those last 4 weeks would be a total open season. If I understand this bill correctly, that last 4 weeks would be the over-the-counter tag opportunity, so you'd have a tremendous amount of hunters in the woods all at the same time, probably in the first 3-4 weeks of the season. And that, in my opinion, would absolutely affect the amount of birds that are able to breed and would drastically affect the population. And unfortunately, you'd probably see more accidents with that many hunters into the woods. And, you know, it's in my opinion, a recipe for, you know, reducing our population and taking out the greatness in the, like we talked earlier, the conservation effort that came to Wisconsin in the plan they put in place to reintroduce and bolster this population that we have to such great numbers and make us one of the top turkey hunting states. I really do think it would hurt our situation and hurt the hunting opportunities. And you're seeing a decline in population all over the country. Some states that were absolutely fantastic turkey hunting states, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, they've all seen a decline in turkey populations and turkey harvest numbers. A couple of them were down 25% last year. And they're reducing the amount of tags available to the hunters. Some states that you cannot use decoys in the first 10 days. Some states you can't harvest a bird within 7 days of water. What do they call those? Wildlife management areas.
Mm-hmm.
WMA is down there. You can't harvest a bird within 7 days of shooting one. So you're really limited. And if our population gets affected that bad and things take a decline, we're going to see stuff like that too, and limited opportunities. And, you know, some states you used to be able to hunt four birds and now you're down to two. So we should be very lucky that we have the opportunities that we have, but we can't abuse it.
Well, no. And I think that's where, you know, you got six periods. One's running right up into Memorial Day, which great is still hunting, but do you really need a season to go that late?
I personally, in my experiences with my buddies that I've hunted with through years, the guys that got me introduced to into hunting deer and turkey, you know, our most successful seasons through the years were week five. For the last 13 years, week five was by far our most successful season, and that's the week last year I hunted 1, 3, 4, and then I had something I always wanted to do, and I actually shot two birds in one shot. I kept had two tags that's in my awesome. Pocket that day, and I fulfilled the little goal that I had for quite a few years. And but yeah, week five has always been the hens are on the nest, they're doing their thing, the toms are out cruising around, and the opportunity is definitely mm-hmm. there to catch cruising toms.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know, the endless supply of tags, I don't know if I agree with that, just based on what I see of, you know, guys coming in buying. Just, I mean, if they're filling every one of those tags, wow. I think that where if you could just, I don't know that you'd have to go to the extremes of changing the zones and changing the time periods. Maybe you just diminish the amount of tags that are available. And I think what were you talking about? Non-residents are like
15 bucks, I believe.
Okay, that should be $100, just like everybody else. Yeah. Iowa's 200.
Yeah, you can't go anywhere with less than three digits outside of Wisconsin to be a non-resident.
Yeah, hello. Come on.
Right?
Seriously. Take a look at that. You know, I mean, and you know, you've got basically, well, you have got the youth hunt before the five zones, and then you got the mentored hunt before that. So not that that takes a ton of birds out. I don't really think it has that huge of an impact on the numbers, but you know, when you take a look at six time periods and endless amounts of tags available, I, in my opinion, agree with me or disagree with me, I think is what they need to cap that at a lower amount. I mean, some of the later periods, you know, there's always tags left over.
Right.
There always is for a fifth and sixth period. There always is. But you know, maybe that fourth period or that third period, which falls right in that main breeding,
right?
You know, that's when a lot of stuff is going on. That's when I harvested probably 80% of the turkeys that I've shot have been in third period. So maybe that's, you know, cut back a little bit. If you draw a third period tag, you shouldn't realistically have the opportunity to buy another one. You know, I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that can go on there, but I just got a really strong feeling of over-harvesting. Okay, we've had this abundance of birds for so many years and then all this stuff and then the changes to create more opportunities. I think at some point in time that has to cease so that the population could somewhat stabilize. There's so many other things that are involved in that. There's hunting pressure, there's predation, there's poaching, there's car accidents. You know how many, I can't even imagine how many turkeys get killed by cars. I see a lot of dead turkeys. A lot of them.
Yep.
And then you've got, you know, the hunting season. So it's not unlike whitetails, you know, where they're hunted for an extended period of time. And there's other elements that go into that. But, you know, and the weather, you know, how what's the spring going to be like? How is that going to impact the breeding for the next year? So I think there's just so many elements that come in there. I think that they should take a closer look at that. I don't think they need to restructure the whole thing. I think they just need to maybe drop some of those numbers down a little bit and not have so much out there and available.
Yeah. I mean, it's been on the decline for, I don't know, a little over 10, 12 years. The highest harvest rate that Wisconsin's ever had was in 2008, shot 52,880 birds that spring. And 2020 was 44,000, just shy of 45,000. And last year was just over 37,000. So you are seeing a decline in harvest during the regular season, but depending on how you look at it, I know some guys don't agree with youth season, but the youth season harvest was up 15% last year. 2 years ago, kids shot 2,881, and last year they shot just over 3,300. So it's good to see a lot of kids getting into it. I absolutely support the youth season 100%. I love being able to take kids out and just see their faces when they hear that first gobble, or just see them shake as the toms fanned out approaching the decoys and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know, when it comes to the whole tags, I mean, there was an overall 17% decrease in harvest numbers from last year to the year before. But, you know, the applications are up, like I said earlier, but the over-the-counter sales were down a lot. But there's still a lot of birds getting shot. And in the listening area here, Zone 3, they shot shy of 10,000 birds last year in Zone 3 and about 9,300 in Zone 2. So there's definitely birds around. I mean, like we were talking earlier before the show, I mean, you drive around, you don't see a whole lot, but they're probably hiding out in someone's woods or a private property, or, you know, until you get boots on the ground and really get out and scout. You know, the road scouting isn't always where it's at. So
yeah, and these birds, you know, this – over the years, one of the things I've noticed is they stick to the timber. You know, I mean, they're out in the fields picking around a little bit, but, you know, that seems to happen a little bit later when the bugs start coming out and the worms, and, you know, there's food for them in the woods. There's plenty of stuff from the scratch around, acorns and all kinds of other things that are in there. The ticks are out already. Yep. I haven't discovered that personally, but I've been told. and they eat ticks.
Yep.
So, you know, that... It has always been to me, even when I kept a journal, that it would make that transition, you know, once it would start to warm up a little bit more and you'd see the fields would start to green up a little bit and some of that stuff would come up and they'd be able to scratch for worms after a rain or something like that. So, yeah, they're out there.
Yeah. And it's funny because a lot of people, and, you know, for you farmers, you know, plug your ears for a second, because a lot of farmers think that turkeys do a lot of damage, and there's been plenty of studies through the years that were done, and most of the damage that think is being done by turkeys is actually done by deer and raccoons. So let the farmers keep thinking that they're doing it so you can get permission to go whack them. So.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But yeah, it's hard to imagine, but I've actually sat in a deer stand and watched what a bunch of raccoons will do to a cornfield.
They'll destroy it. I initially, when I first seen it, I actually took pictures of it and asked a buddy of mine at the time, a coworker, I thought it was a bear. Like
making that much noise. That's
the
crazy.
The noise and just the, how they just flatten out a whole section of, he's like, nope, they climb right up it and then they'll knock the whole thing down and get the ears of corn right off the,
yep.
I'm like, wow, I didn't know a raccoon could do that much damage. So
yeah, between raccoons, squirrels, bears, deer. It's not, turkeys don't have, you know, the ability to be knocking stuff over. They're just picking at it.
Yep.
And they're kind of picking up all the leftover stuff that the coons leave or what's left over from the year before. They're not knocking corn stalks over there. I've seen them pick at it when it's been on, but I've never seen them do anything other than that.
Yeah, turkeys only account for about, I think it was about 12% of actual crop damage that was done. If you ever get a chance, look up Robert Abernathy. He was a turkey biologist down in the Carolinas, and he worked for the NWTF for for decades and pretty much dedicated his life to studying turkeys. And he actually, if you ever watch Meat Eater, him and Steve Rinella had a couple episodes. They were hunting turkeys down in the Carolinas, but he's got some fantastic studies and facts and statistics on what all goes into a turkey and their biology and their feeding habits and all that other stuff. It's absolutely interesting stuff for a turkey nut like me, because my wife thinks I'm on Facebook half the time, but I'm actually reading about turkeys and stuff that she would probably not be interested in. So,
you know, you spend enough time in the tree stand and in a blind and running and gunning for turkeys, you spend a lot of time just watching, observing, you know, behavior and, you know, what they're feeding on. And I remember back in the day that we would call the farmer would say, well, give me a call before you guys come out here and I'll go throw some manure in the field.
Right.
Yeah. That was like a dinner bell.
Yep.
For turkeys.
Picking out all the bugs and the grain and anything else that's out in there. And
absolutely.
With a mild winter like this, there's going to be some plump turkeys. We get to see a new state record. There's a 2002 it was over in St. Croix County. There's a 34.5-pound bird shot that year. That's the biggest one that is on record.
That's big.
That's huge.
When you figure your average one is what, 18 to 21 pounds maybe?
Yeah, somewhere in there. I know two guys that have shot 30-pounders. One was up in Door County and one was, he actually used to be a landowner that let us hunt up on the north side of Outagamie County by Shawnee County line.
Nice. Yeah, that 30-pound bird is a big bird. I've seen one shot. A friend of mine shot one in Prairie du Chien. It was 30.85 pounds. We took it to the grocery store and put it on a certified scale.
Wow.
And that was, I mean, his head was huge. He knew it was big when he shot it, but when we actually went up and he's like, wait, look at the size of the head.
Yeah.
It's like the one I shot last year. I mean, his head was like a tennis ball.
Yeah.
The one was enormous.
My daughter shot last year was fantastic. I mean, it was just shy of 26. I couldn't imagine adding another 9 pounds onto, 8-9 pounds onto that. It was a beautiful bird.
Yep. That they are. All right, well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score.
This is Pat Reif from Driven TV. You're listening to Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick here on The Score.
Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. We're talking turkey with my friend Scott Ruin. Scott, you know, let's talk about the hunting part of it. You know, you've hunted all seasons. I've hunted every one but the last one. And you've had great success in that fifth period. I have good luck the third period. And everybody has their own methods and their own decision process of how they like to do that. But you know, what is it about the latter period that you like that really draws you towards that?
Cause my hunting style, I run and gun. I'm not built for sitting still in a blind. I will be sleeping in 20 minutes. I like to run and gun and just get out there and hit all the public land I have and try to find those crews and toms and get those multiple birds. I've had a lot of luck through the late seasons calling in multiple birds. But yeah, just getting out and boots on the ground and getting around. I don't, in the late seasons, I don't carry decoys. I'm just total, it's just all calling for me in the late seasons and getting those crews and toms to get in the right spot to give you a shot. So I really don't have much of a technique in the late seasons besides not being on the couch and being in the woods. So
yeah. Yeah, the no decoy thing, I think after the season gets that lengthy that maybe they're a little bit shy of a lot of things. You know, they've been through 4 weeks of pressure, especially if you're hunting public ground. But, you know, I like third period for the reason, like you mentioned earlier, that it's the peak of the breeding, and they're already on the nest by then.
Yep.
So they'll fly down with them in the morning. You don't have to get out there at the crack of dawn, even though I still love to because I love that whole pageantry that goes with that. But, you know, you could get out there at 9 o'clock, you know, and once those hens leave them, because it was one of the first observations I made, you know, when the toms are in a tree, they're calling to the hens call back to them, they fly down, they all get together and have a little party, and then, okay, the girls decide this guy, he's not very attractive anymore. They go do their thing. They go hit the nest, and all of a sudden, you know, here's Tom all by himself, and he's trying to find himself a girlfriend. And I've always lived by the hasn't fulfilled it every time, but if you can get a turkey to gobble at you at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, you should be able to kill him.
Yep. Yep, and that's exactly what we did last year with my daughter. We were out, and we didn't get them off the roost. They were gobbling. They went away. Couldn't hear them anymore. Daughter kind of lost interest a little bit. Dad, I'm hungry type of thing. So we went and got breakfast and came back, and, you know, it's about 9 o'clock, 9:30, and about half hour later, she's like, Dad, how long are we going to stay? I said, kiddo, let's just give it some time. This is your hunt, but I'm just telling you, going to get good pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And did a little calling, and I heard him gobble out in the distance, but she was playing on her phone, you know, keeping herself occupied. And she didn't hear it, and I didn't have any reaction. So a little bit later, I told her, I says, well, you should probably get your gun ready. And she, why, did you see one? I said, not yet, but I think one's coming. She's like, how do you know? And I called, and he gobbled, and he was just over the ridge, maybe 100 yards away. And all of a sudden, she starts shaking, and her eyes are big as saucers. And, yeah, as soon as that's those early, I'd say first three periods, like, if I go out blind, I'll take one Jake decoy with me. And we had one Jake and one hen out there because we were sitting in a blind. But as soon as that Tom saw that Jake, he was right there on top of it, and he came bull rushing in. And so... yeah, the technique for me and my hunting preferences in the early season a little bit different than the later seasons. But, yeah, early seasons, I don't mind carrying a Jake decoy with me if I don't know where the birds are. And I'll just hunker down for a little bit under a tree and stick the decoy out in the edge, field edge or something.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and it's funny. And there's another observation over the years is that, you know, if, you know, you get one calling to you and he's there and it happens to all of us, you get intercepted, you know, some hens come walking out and all of a sudden they're walking in opposite direction and off he goes.
Right.
And don't give up,
right.
You know, all of a sudden, you know, an hour later or whatever, you know, I would usually call, if it would slow down, I'd call like every 20 minutes, you know, yep. And then I'd wait for a response. And, it's amazing how many times they might be a long ways away, but all of a sudden they're there.
Yep.
It's like, now you have to make that decision. Do I want to stay here? Do I want to move on them? You know, do I want to run that risk and you know, play it out, you know, make it happen.
Yeah.
And I've done that to turkey hunting and busted them on the way in because they were a lot closer than what I thought they were. But then it's also put that in my favor where I closed that distance a lot quicker, you know. You kind of fool him into thinking, okay, she's coming a little closer, and then he's going to start coming towards you, and all of a sudden, hopefully you can meet somewhere in the middle. But I think along with that comes, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, is using your terrain,
yep,
to, you know, camouflage your movements.
Yeah, absolute woodsmanship is absolute key. I think the two things, in my opinion, that make a hunter most successful, you could have all the top-notch gear, you could have your 12 gauge with a TSS pattern in there shooting good patterns at 70 yards. Nothing is going to kill more turkeys, and a lot of experienced hunters I've heard and talked to agree at the same thing, is woodsmanship and patience. Those two things, mm-hmm, right there will get you more turkeys than all the top-notch equipment in the world.
Yeah, it is exactly right, because it's not a, you know, we've all had that happen, and I've mentored some people and family members and called them right off the roost, and they flew down into the field and ran over, and boom.
Yep.
Well, that was easy.
Right.
No.
No.
That doesn't. That's a rarity right there.
Yeah.
You know, it happens to all of us. It's happened to me. I can't speak for you, but you know, you they're in that tree, and if you can get to them right away, and you do that little soft tree yelp, and they don't fly right down in the field, land about 70 yards out, and walk right in.
Yeah. I had one time. I've shot two off the roost within 30 seconds of them flying down, and the one came in, saw the decoy that I had, came running right in. The other one literally landed like 30 yards from me. Took two steps and then
boom,
kind of peeked his head up, and I was done. I mean, my coffee was still warm when I got back to the truck, so
it's
one of those great mornings.
It's so anticlimactic. It's like, yeah, I got a turkey. Dang, now what am I going
to
do?
Right, and there's a joy to it that you were able to harvest such an awesome, beautiful bird, and just it there's a moment of satisfaction of absolutely being thrilled to be able to harvest one of these birds. But at the same time, if you're, in my opinion, a true hunter, you want to work that bird.
You do.
Mm-hmm. You want the full experience. You want to hear the gobble 200 yards away. You want to be able to call them in. You want to be able to just work it and watch them. And so, I mean, it happens. Like you said, some hunts are over before the sun's even fully up. I mean, I was 2 minutes after legal shooting time when I got that guy in. But other seasons, you struggle. Like last year, I mean, I couldn't get on a bird. I like to call them in, you know, less than 40 yards for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple that hung up, you know, in 60 yard range, and I had, you know, the infinite TSS loads in there. I bought them a couple years ago. And I knew my gun pattern out that far, and I would probably be able to drop them, but I didn't. So you got to have the fun in it. And you know, some people gripe and moan about the way other people hunt, and if it's legal, let it go. I mean, you may not agree with it. Just if it's legal, there's no harm in it.
Yeah, sit in a blind, sit under a tree, crawl in the mud, you know, sneak up a ditch. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, use a box of Remington Nitro shells that are, what, $18 or whatever they are now.
If you can find them.
Yeah, if you can find them. Or spend $50 on your 5 shells of TSS. You know, I mean, that's the big hot thing now that everybody's hyped up about. If you can, like you said, if you can find them, but
yeah, you have those times where you can just you work the bird, and then all of a sudden there he is. He's at 50 yards, back and forth. They're like, you can almost tell at that one point he's not coming.
Right.
You know, he's going to sit there and he's going to do that, and then he's going to get to the point where he loses interest and he turns around and goes back the opposite way. It just, you know, it just happens that way. You know, yeah. you go from the penthouse to the outhouse in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, you
know?
If you hunt long enough, you're going to see it more often than you really want to. So,
yeah, way more often than you think.
I've screwed up more hunts than I've been successful, and some of the best hunts I've ever had, I came out empty-handed. So yep. It's part of the sport. That's why you do it. That's why the addiction is there, because you still are blessed with tomorrow to give it another go. So.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take our last break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up here on Fleet Farms Living the Outdoors Show on The Score.
This is Will Primos. You're listening to Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick.
Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoors Show. Couple minutes left here. If you have any questions, comments, or you want to contact me, it's livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. I do appreciate the opportunities to get people connected in the outdoors and the kind words as well. You can follow me on Instagram. I've been a little forgetful in posting up my Throwback Thursday pictures, but I found a whole bunch of new ones that I'll be posting up that are most interesting. I posted the last one up there, and my daughter didn't even think it looked like me. So, neither did my wife for that fact. She goes, "Is that really you?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's me." But I have fun doing that because I've always been one on documenting my adventures, outdoor adventures, from fishing to you know, hunting and all that stuff, videos. And we were talking about it a few shows back about, like, I had an old 110 camera, poorest quality piece of crap, but, you know, nothing was dark, and even with the flash, they were bad pictures, but nonetheless took, you know, hundreds and hundreds of photographs of a lot of that stuff. And it's kind of cool to go back and look at all those memories and all the people that I got to share time with in the outdoors. It's got to be pretty special for you too, Scott, to have your daughter to hang out with.
Yeah, we've had some good. She's been coming with me. She'll be 13 this year, so she's been coming out in the woods with me since she was 6, and she's gotten into it. My son's 9. He wants to come for the first time this year. He doesn't want to hunt, but he wants to come with me. I think he's more interested in dressing up in camo and hiding than he is about actually hunting. But I've had him out, you know, shooting BB guns and 22s and stuff. So I'm not going to force him into anything. Just wait for their time to come.
It is, and it all comes in. You just, if you let them choose their own path, in that direction, you'll be better satisfied about it, whether they do it or not.
For sure.
But, you know, give them the opportunity. Scott, great to see you, my friend. Great to have you back on the show, back in the studio. I'm sure we'll be chatting as the season goes on, and we'll find out how each other is doing.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, sir.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to tune us in tonight. Glad to have you along for the ride. Remember, if you have the opportunity to impact somebody's life through the outdoors, take advantage of it. I guarantee you it will make you a better person. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Have a great evening and live life in the outdoors.